Bitchy Gay Men, Episode 6, It's a Slippery Slope to Cannibalism.
We don't have a song.
I know we don't.
Andrew, so go!
The new guy.
I am Bill Antoniou, and with me is...
Michael Soulard.
Daniel Krolik.
And we're very excited to have our very first guest on BGM. Introduce yourself.
Andrew Lamb, I'm here to join.
Yay. Andrew,
welcome! Yay.
Thanks for having me.
Andrew is a very wonderful and successful Toronto theater director, and we're very honored that he has decided to grace us with his presence.
They're trying to replace me.
As we, well.
It's his audition.
It's like, do you remember on Different Strokes when they got the little redheaded kid when Gary Coleman was growing up?
No.
Oh my God, I do.
Like, yeah, it's just like that.
It's just like that.
I don't know if I'll be able to.
I'm watching you, Andrew.
So today we are discussing the classic film Suddenly Last Summer, directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz. This is our first time delving into the gay archives, so we're very excited about that and see what comes of that. Michael, could you give us a synopsis of the film?
Absolutely. I just want to say, the other day I did mention to someone how I never watch old-timey movies, and I'm glad I had to watch this because... I was into it, so now I think I'm going to add that to my repertoire.
You never
so
watched
thank
older
you.
Movies before?
No, I think I had like a really bad experience. I can't even remember
which
movie.
We've been friends for like 7 years, and I didn't know
never.
This about you.
Yeah, never.
Now it could be on your special skills section of your resume. Watch your old-timey movies.
It already is. Anyway, okay, moving on. So the movie that we watched is Suddenly Last Summer. Synopsis: Suddenly, one summer, a young poet named Sebastian dies a mysterious death while being accompanied on vacation with his cousin, right?
Cousin, yes.
Cousin, Catherine. A year later, Sebastian's mother, Violet, played by the wonderful Catherine Hepburn, seeks the help of a super out-of-it lobotomy surgeon named Dr. Krukowicz. Is that my pronouncing that properly?
I don't know.
Krukowicz.
I just think it's funny that the waspiest actor in the world is playing someone named Krukowicz.
Oh, right? Who's played by Montgomery Clift. Yeah. To lobotomize Catherine, played by the beautiful Elizabeth Taylor.
He's a brain surgeon, by the way. There's no such thing as a lobotomy doctor.
No, they say lobotomy surgeon in
they
the movie.
Do?
They do, yes. Thanks.
It's
in order to prevent her, Catherine, from shedding the truth about her son's death, and most importantly, his true persona, i.e. he loves him some schlong. For the record, everyone, Mac computers don't recognize the word schlong. Just want to let you guys know that.
Are you spelling it with an H or a CH?
Are you spelling it the Yiddish way or...
With an H.
Oh.
SH. Schlong.
Try a CH.
Whatever. They can make supercomputers, but they can't like recognize the word schlong. Anyway, this action-packed movie is full of smoking, sharp dramatic turns, and a doctor who either has no idea why he's there or is wasted.
Very likely.
They're not mutually exclusive.
No. Right? Especially at that time period. Let's begin. Suddenly last summer.
The film was released on December 22nd of 1959... apparently Gore Vidal and Tennessee Williams' partner Frank Merlot may briefly be glimpsed among those observing Montgomery Clift operating in the opening sequence. Hmm. Patricia Neal, actually, if you know Patricia Neal, Academy Award winning actress.
Hyde.
Probably most famous at this point for her small role in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
And Hyde.
And what?
Hyde.
Oh, Hyde. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were saying Hyde. And I'm like, why?
Hyde, Bill. After us.
She played...
And she was married to her old doll.
That's right. And she just died, I think last year, the year before. And she played the role on the London stage and was sure she would be given the role in the film adaptation and was not Elizabeth Taylor got her role. And according to Gore Vidal, he says that it was Bosley Crowther's review of the film is what made the film a hit, because he wrote a review, a scathing review denouncing the film, saying it has degenerates obsessed with rape, incest, homosexuality, cannibalism, and then the film became a runaway hit, which I checked the box office records of 1960, and it was number 5 of the entire year, making just under $7 million, which tells you a lot about ticket prices
right.
in 1959, because that's about as much
I
as you
spend. I used to buy a loaf of bread.
That's about as much as you spend at the concession stand nowadays. Apparently, according to IMDb, it's one of the few classic films to address smoking as an addiction that can affect the mood or the attitude of the smoker.
Yes!
The film went on to be nominated for 3 Academy Awards, including Best Actress for Katharine Hepburn, Best Actress for Elizabeth Taylor, and Best Art Direction, Set Decoration, Black and White, which is totally appropriate because there is so much furniture in her house.
So much. What happened in Best Actor, Montgomery
and Clift? Vegetation.
No, no.
Yeah, the vegetation.
There's a
outside.
Lot of vegetation. That's,
oh, yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Taylor actually won the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Drama over Katharine Hepburn. And it also won, she won the Laurel Award, which at the time was sort of, kind of equivalent to what we now call the People's Choice Award. So it's like audience-based, and she was voted the top female dramatic performance. Just to give you, I mean, Elizabeth Taylor was the number one box office star in the world at the time. So just to give you a sense of where she is in her career at this point. And it was declared one of the top 10 films of the year by the National Board of Review. The film was actually given special permission from the Breen Office, which was the leading censor board at the time, to deal with the subject of homosexuality, which it deals with quite head-on compared to other movies of the time.
Compared, yeah.
And their stipulation was, since the film illustrates the horrors of such a lifestyle, it can be considered moral in theme, even though it deals with sexual perversion. Mm-hmm. I personally think it's really funny that when Tennessee Williams decides to write, and this is not the only play where he did this, but when he writes a piece where the homosexuality is overt, it comes out in the most melodramatic way. It's one of the campiest movies possible. So let's get started. The first thing I notice is that it says it takes place in 1937, and it clearly doesn't take place in 1937 if you get just a cursory look at Elizabeth Taylor's hair or her clothing.
Exactly.
And then we start off in this nut house of an insane asylum, where there's all these women who are supposedly insane, and you just know that they were all just, like, jilted at the altar.
But let's start with that opening shot with the credits, with the beautiful, gigantic brick wall, and panning over to the minuscule asylum sign.
I got excited because I thought it was going to be West Side Story again. That's how West Side Story ends.
And instead, it just says, Lions View State
I really wanted, yeah. I really wanted to
in
hear...
Small little letters.
I really wanted to hear Katharine Hepburn sink her teeth into a boy like that.
And of course, we switch to an operating theater.
Yes, that's right. Where we have to give this long scene to... This was actually based on a one-act play by Tennessee Williams, so it's interesting to know what they do to stretch it out over feature length, including, you know, this very long operating scene, just to establish the fact that he is a surgeon and that he's good at his job. But otherwise, it's not particularly necessary to the dramatic structure of the film.
Yeah.
Well, it shows maybe the conditions. That's
it shows that it's a hospital in dire need of funding. That,
and there's actual
crazy old Kate is. What
and there's actually a line where I can't remember who the older doctor is, the head of the hospital. Who knows?
The one with a vaguely New Orleans by way of Boston dialect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, him. But he actually has a line saying, introducing the state-of-the-art operating theater,
right.
In which case, 10 seconds later, a foot, like, smashes in a banister post. It was awesome.
So that's Montgomery Clift playing the surgeon. At the point in his career that he's at, Montgomery Clift became a huge star in the late 40s, early 50s. He was a major heartthrob. He was the most beautiful young man in movies ever. And then he made a film in 1953, which was From Here to Eternity, a very famous film. And then got really picky about roles and didn't make a film for 4 years because nothing was good enough.
Wow.
And also had a major substance abuse problem, like major drug and alcohol problem. And then in 1958, was it? He has, 1956, excuse me, he has a very terrible car accident while leaving Elizabeth Taylor's house, super drunk, crashes his car. It destroys his face in the accident, and Elizabeth Taylor is the first one to find him in the car, and apparently, this is the legend anyway, cradled his head in her lap and removed teeth from the back of his throat, which is why he didn't choke to death. And when the photographer showed up, she made sure that no one took a single photo. There's no photos of that event. And she told them all, if you take one photo of this, I will never let you guys take a picture of me ever again. And it worked.
Wow.
And so then he doesn't make a movie again until he has recovered from the accident. And his first movie back at work is 1957's Raintree County, which is 2 years before this. Now, I should say he was actually making that movie when he had his accident. So a lot of people watch his movies from that point on and they're like, oh, we can see before the accident, after the accident, how different his face looks because of the accident. And actually, his substance abuse had a lot more to do with the fact that he looked so much older and more tired, which is why, I mean, he's only about 40 when we do Suddenly Last Summer.
Thank you. That was a question I had.
Yeah, he looks really older.
He looks like he's sort of a combination of terrified and embarrassed to be there, which sort of works for the character because he's in all these ridiculous situations.
And Mercedes McCambridge plays Elizabeth Taylor's mother in this film, and she says that when they were filming the movie, she used to ride to the set with Montgomery Clift in the same car, and he would always make them stop by a nearby prison so that he could yell at the inmates through the windows before they would go to work. So he was possibly unbalanced.
Yell what?
I don't know. You just wanted to scream.
Go.
But he was also gay, wasn't he?
He was. So that's the other thing. But we'll talk about that later as well. But and then also, because of these problems he was having, the studio didn't even want to hire him. And it was Elizabeth Taylor, because of her clout, who got him hired on the job. Because she was a really, really good friend of his. She was actually madly in love with him. And got him hired. And apparently he was very badly treated by the producer and the director to the point that it made Katharine Hepburn so mad that on her last day of shooting, when she filmed her last shot, she went up to the director and spat in his face for the way he'd been treating Montgomery Clift the whole time.
Oh my God.
So that's
that
a more...
fly on that wall.
Right?
Yes. I love... Okay, so then... After that scene, sorry, Daniel, you had something to say?
Oh, no, go ahead.
So then we move on to Montgomery Clift going to Katharine Hepburn's house, where first we meet her secretary, Miss Foxhill, who tells him he's 23 seconds early. I love this trope in, like, these women who have secretaries, and why do they have secretaries?
In a house.
Well, yeah,
and
but
she's not a housekeeper.
She's like a batty old woman. Like, what does she need a secretary for? It tells you what a different world that we're
witnessing. And who speaks, and again, this is ostensibly set in the Deep South, but who speaks with, like, the clipped, vaguely British
Mid-Atlantic. They all have weird, and Elizabeth Taylor's attempt at a Southern accent is also very strange.
But it's only selectively Southern. It's like a scene-by-scene Southern.
For sure. And then, of course, we know we're in Grand Gothic territory when Katharine Hepburn does not descend a staircase to meet Montgomery Clift.
Oh, thank you.
But comes down in a private elevator with no door?
It's like a seated elevator.
Yeah.
With a crazy... But I love the shot because she comes down, you hear her, and then you see her beautiful shoes come down in this elevator, and she's talking. You're like, oh my God, wow, what a grand entrance. I wish I had that elevator. But then she disappears behind the like grated gate, and you're like, that's an odd choice for
like
the set.
Pearly Gates gate. Like
why even have a gate?
Yeah,
and then she just gets up and walks like a normal person.
Yeah. Really quite eccentric, yeah.
I love it.
Although I did want to compare and contrast that with the old man from Up who rides up and down the stairs.
That infomercial? What?
The Pixar movie Up.
The infomercial with the old man like getting up the banister chair. It's amazing.
She's like the soul of camp in this movie. Like she plays that character the way like white men play strange men of the Orient in old 30s movies. Like it's that level of performance.
Can I say, and maybe you even know this, but her, I don't, again, I haven't, this is my first like old time movie that I watched, but I don't know if that's, if Katharine Hepburn acts like this in every movie, or if it's literally the character, but her performance is very Anthony Hopkins, Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs.
She is very capable of being subtle. If you watch a movie like Summertime, she's a lot more
The Philadelphia.
So that's fine. So then
but
I wonder.
She also knew how to pump it up for Southern Gothic. She knew the material she was working with,
and she commits to it.
Yeah,
she's
absolutely
not embarrassed by it.
But I'd be interested to find out if Anthony Hopkins looked at that character and used it as inspiration because it's the run on sentences, it's the sharp, rigid inflections in her voice, and it's
she understands the surroundings. I mean, like
I can't wait to see Anthony Hopkins in the Katharine Hepburn story in 2014.
He was so good as Hitchcock. It's a natural.
You heard it here, folks.
Particularly if they reenact that entrance.
Please. That entrance should be in every movie. So talking about that scene, one thing we need to talk about that women and gay men, us, actually, we're going to bring this back. The term lip rouge for lipstick. Let's call it lip rouge. What a beautiful, beautiful word.
That's very Southern, isn't it?
Oh, I love it.
And then she walks him through her house with like so many couches. There's a lot of furniture in that house. No stairs.
A lot of lamps.
Just in case you faint.
Yes, absolutely.
There's always someone to catch.
And then she takes him out into her garden, which is Jurassic Park.
I was going to say the Disney's Jungle Cruise with, or like, the fake
Journey to the Center of the Earth. I kept wanting to gesture over to like the goat that was tethered to the pole, and then like T-Rex comes and eats it, because that garden is crazy.
Well, and she never stops talking. I don't even know where she was breathing in that scene, because it was just like full on.
Yeah, from and it sort of looks like it's one continuous take.
Yeah. Like, it also tells you a lot about Katharine Hepburn's talent, and that she could sustain the argument the whole time. She's so good.
That, and her mouth never moves. She like she acts with her teeth.
Oh, and to be from Connecticut.
I would say even more her face. I mean, was not a wrinkle. And this is before Botox. I mean, she...
Yes, and throw in these hand gestures. I know you guys can't see
it.
Listen to
this,
but she's amazing.
She was in her
40s? She's 50, actually. She was born in, 1908, 1909.
You see the liver spots right at the end of the movie.
She also was very... A lot of people think of Katharine Hepburn as being this, like, no-muss, no-fuss kind of, like, I'm all about being natural kind of woman, and she wasn't. She was very, very, very particular about her looks in movies, and so I wouldn't even be surprised if she was doing that technique that it used to be more common, where you would put elastics on your head that pulled your face back, and then they would go under your wig. I wouldn't be surprised if she was doing that.
I never heard of that.
It was sort of like, so that you wouldn't have to have a facelift, you could just do it for cosmetic reasons in movies.
Can I try that?
Anna Magnani did it in most of her movies.
Really?
She almost always did it in her movies. Joe Pesci does it in My Cousin Vinny, not joking. I thought he did that.
Oh, God.
He got
Yeah, he had that under his, like, he was wearing a wig, and then he had that under
Don't
his
groan
wig,
so. For My no, Cousin
no,
Vinny.
No, no. That's just disturbing.
It's an old, it's a wonderful old-timey movie.
It's a great movie.
It's amazing, but not to get off topic.
Yes, yes, sorry.
So that scene is also where we also establish the fact that this movie is going to lay its symbolism on really thick. Like, she has a fucking Venus flytrap.
Called our wicked lady.
Yes, that she feeds meat to, which of course foreshadows.
Do you think that's the only thing Katharine Hepburn calls our wicked lady?
No. Not if you read Scotty Bowers' book, in which you find out a lot about Katharine Hepburn that you didn't already know.
But what's great about the Venus flytrap is that she feeds it once, and she like almost passes out. She's so tired, so she makes her secretary do it.
And she has that like huge
and there's a special
jungle.
Cage. There's a special.
I love it. Like, it's like this jungle, but the Venus flytrap's in like a little cage, so that it won't run away.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, where's it gonna go?
And she talks about fantastic babblings, which I absolutely love.
Love it.
Every time anyone talks about gayness in this movie, I love the ways that they come up with getting around it without having to say it.
It's just like my family dinners.
And she's so upset about her son being accused of being gay, but she sashays around her house in these fabulous gowns in this fantastic garden, which she's not ashamed to talk about.
Well, it all comes together in the end, doesn't it?
Her performance is totally up there with Baby Jane, like Betty Davis and Baby Jane, as roles that could be played by drag queens and no one would notice.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Katharine Hepburn at this point in her career, so as like I said, she was about 50 years old. She never really had much of a dip. She was always quite successful.
Well, in the 30s, she was box office poison.
She was box office poison for like 10 minutes and then shows up at MGM with the Philadelphia Story under her arm, which was a property that she personally had bought, and said, I'll make this if you cast me in it. And then from then on until the end of her life, she was a huge success. She earned 12 Oscar nominations, and up until Meryl held the record for nominations, but she had them over a long period of time from like 1932 until 1981, which just says something about how popular she stayed, in that every few years she would get, you know, nominated.
But I think she still has won more performance Oscars than anybody.
She has won Best Actress four times. And no one has won a leading Oscar more than twice, and then three actors have three Oscars. Oh, no, sorry. Daniel Day-Lewis has now won three Best Actor Oscars. So he's the only person. Yeah.
I should have known I was gay, because talking about Katharine Hepburn, at the age of 9, I saw On Golden Pond, and I remember falling in love with her.
the loons.
Shaky.
So that whole first scene is also establishing the fact that she can't admit the fact that her son is gay. Like, that's basically what establishes.
And has this awful emotional stronghold on him.
Yes, and of course dates the film, because it comes off as campy to us. I'm sure it came off as completely salacious to the people at the time.
Sorry, I've never read the play. This is the first time I see the movie. But does she allude to that at this first scene?
She's alluding to the fact that that's what Elizabeth Taylor is saying about him.
That he had a certain lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I
and that's
that.
Why she wants. That's why she wants him to cut her brain.
Yes.
Out. Yeah.
Which I
she
get.
Doesn't want people to know that her son was gay.
But I just didn't get the whole like alluding to the gay thing right off the top.
No, I mean, she's fantastic babblings. You know, that's what she's saying Elizabeth Taylor is doing.
Yeah, okay.
And she's willing to spend millions of dollars giving to a hospital
at that time
in order to cover up the fact that her dead son was gay.
Yeah.
Well, and I love the name that she comes up with for the dementia precox.
Yes, dementia precox.
That's
which
right.
Was, also, I believe what Janet Frame is accused of having in An Angel at My Table, and she was almost lobotomized, but published a book that won an award, mm-hmm. and that's what saved her.
But right away, Monty Clift is like, "Oh, that's not real."
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because I think he means it's not scientifically verifiable. Mm-hmm. But cutting women's brains who were emotionally erratic is a very, very common thing. I mean, history has always had wonderfully curious ways of dealing with quote unquote unstable women.
Yeah.
But I find especially in the first half of this century, of the last century, cutting women's brains in order to deal with it is very common and pops up in narratives a lot, like Rambling Rose with Laura Dern and Diane Ladd is about a young woman that they want to perform a lobotomy on to control her sexual, the fact that she's what they consider a nymphomaniac, basically, when really she's just a good time girl.
Crazy.
So we meet Mrs. Holly, which is Elizabeth Taylor's mother, played, as I said, by
the great Mercedes McCambridge.
Mercedes McCambridge won an Oscar about 10 years before this for All the King's Men as Best Supporting Actress, and then was nominated again for Giant, where she played Elizabeth Taylor's sister-in-law.
Yeah.
And then
She was in Johnny Guitar.
I'm going to kill you, not if I kill you first. And then she's in Touch of Evil as one of the guys who rapes Janet Leigh. She's in a motorcycle jacket and...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's weird.
What year was that?
1958. Well, they almost raped Janet Leigh. I can't remember if they actually had their way
with it.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about her career or her background, but I get the feeling that she's sort of like the Angela Lansbury of the day, in the sense that she, by the time she was like 30, she was playing mothers.
For sure. And the most
How old was she here?
I don't know. She probably wasn't that much. I'm sure she wasn't old enough to be Elizabeth Taylor's actual mother. And then she is also very famous for having been the voice of the demon in The Exorcist. She's the voice coming out of Linda Blair's mouth.
I did not know
in The Exorcist. Yeah.
Fun fact of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah. She spent a couple days in a recording studio smoking up a storm to make her voice more hoarse, and is the one you hear being like, "You met a sex cocks in hell." That's Mercedes McCambridge.
Oh my God, I love
Mrs.
her.
Holly. Yeah.
My new ringtone.
I also love. They often refer to Sebastian and his sophisticated friends. I also find this is a very common way of talking about how gay people are.
Sophisticated.
That's what Mrs. Holly says.
And this movie was ahead of its time because right away Katharine Hepburn was like, "Oh, he died of a heart attack."
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually Mercedes McCambridge who's like, "Oh, these bright young people he used to know, his sophisticated friends.
Who said such sophisticated things."
Yeah.
And there's a really great line in that scene because we're talking about when Kathy's mother and George come in, right?
Yeah.
We're there.
Yes.
And I think it's Katharine Hepburn who says, "Say something funny, make me stop wanting to cry."
And it does contain my favorite moment of the film where the hick cousin George is rifling through the suits and Katharine Hepburn takes the whip and just
Him
away.
It's very theatrical.
I love
theatrical.
The way she deals with the relatives she obviously can't stand. Like, she doesn't even hide how impatient she is with them.
And even on her entrance, she was like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, totally.
Right from the entrance.
Yeah. And then...
Which really does justify Montgomery Clift's uncomfortableness for the entire movie.
Yeah, he was really quite out of it.
But a little bit wobbly at this scene, too. I don't know if you notice. Like, when they do the far shots, he's like taking like weird steps.
Montgomery Clift is kind of the father of what we consider like that sort of naturalistic down low film acting, but he always took it too far. Like he was actually a full on mumbler in the earlier days. It came out, like, if you watch The Heiress, which he's wonderful in, or A Place in the Sun, which is him at his absolutely most beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really quite affecting, but he got very indulgent about it. It's partly one of the reasons why. I mean, and I'm getting all this information from a biography I read of his by Robert LaGuardia. He tried to do stage plays a few times and was a disaster because people couldn't hear him or understand what he was saying. He was a real mumbler. And so by the time we get to this movie, he's a mumbler, plus he's out of it the whole time. He died only 7 years after this movie was made. He was quite young. So it is quite problematic. And apparently it was Elizabeth Taylor who kept him in the job because she had the power to...
I mean, he wasn't horrifying to watch.
No,
it just stood out so much compared to the rest of the cast as it's being also, so feeble.
If you're familiar with his career, it's really shocking that it's only 8 years after he was at his most attractive, and it looks like it's 30 years later.
It's true.
And then by the time you get to Judgment at Nuremberg 2 years later, he's completely just... you can tell he's going to die soon, basically.
Yes, and it's great that we go with the common theme of eyebrows with our podcast.
It's true.
Which seems to have gotten thicker since he was
Such
younger. It's
luxurious
weird.
Eyebrows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell
me before, are we about to hit Elizabeth Taylor?
We are. Oh, yeah.
Okay, before we actually
if
hit...
If I had a nickel for every time that was said.
Rest in peace.
There is one more line of Katharine Hepburn's that I love so much before we head over to the new scene, is her line, "Isn't it nice of the drugstore to keep me alive?"
and this is
like,
about...
I want to do a series of, like, Pride t-shirts.
A drag queen to play this role, exactly. And it would be, you wouldn't
amazing.
Have to change.
And it's sort of overlooked in the oeuvre of great
yes,
female
which is also amazing, because many of them are Tennessee Williams characters.
It's true,
you
yeah.
know.
And I do, before we move on, I just do want to reference when the secretary brings Katharine Hepburn her medicine with the frozen diary.
Yeah.
Tracer.
But, and has two, but doesn't give the other one to Montgomery Clift. Just leaves with the other one.
She's off to have that in the kitchen.
Well, no, which is hilarious.
And they're called Dakaris. They call them Dakaris.
That's right, you're Dakari. I wrote that note. It struck me, obviously, and obviously it's a choice. And I wonder if she brought two out, because normally she brings two for Sebastian and his mother.
Oh, maybe.
Is that what it is?
And she didn't realize he died last year.
Exactly. She's like, where is he?
I'm
like,
so used to doing this.
He's out with his sophisticated young friends.
I love it.
So, of course, we move on to the next scene, which is where we meet Elizabeth Taylor in the insane asylum, where she has the movie version of no makeup, which is a lot of makeup,
but no makeup.
Foundation. So, like, her eyes and her lips and everything are done, but, like,
lots
you can see a few freckles on her face. Yeah, totally.
I could see her eyes from the back row.
Yeah.
And her asylum gown is very form-fitting. Everyone else is in a potato sack, but Elizabeth Taylor cinches in at the waist and really, like, shows off her bosoms.
Well, and I love this opening shot where we actually see, you know, she's lying there in bed at St. Mary's, and on the wall... is the words "Thou God seest me"?
Right.
Oh, that's
yeah.
right.
Can I just say, I
which
absolutely...
sort of sounds like just a bunch of fridge magnets rearranged?
Exactly. I was like,
it's another T-shirt, my friend.
I am absolutely crazy, madly in love with Elizabeth Taylor. I love Elizabeth Taylor so
She's
much; it's
great.
Unhealthy. I fucking love her, and I love her in this movie. She
oh my
is
God!
So
calm
much...
down.
No,
girl.
I really, I love her so much.
Jesus.
I think she's... I can't get over how beautiful she is. Yeah. And if any girl is listening that I've told looks like Elizabeth Taylor, you know how crazy I get when I think a girl looks like Elizabeth Taylor. I accosted a girl at a party once and I made her take a photo with me.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's sad.
And girls who don't look like Elizabeth Taylor, try harder.
You don't
it
apply
does
yourself.
Not get, it does not get better. It does. The other thing that's remarkable about her in this
Here
movie
goes our
is
girl
that,
demographic.
is that she's like... 3 years away from Virginia Woolf. She's like 3 or 4 years away.
She's 7 years. Yeah.
Oh, is it that much?
66
okay.
is Virginia Woolf. Yeah.
I thought it was earlier.
Yeah. The period when she changed quite a bit, where she quote-unquote gained weight, whatever, she gained like 5 pounds, and she's still the most fucking beautiful woman in the world, but everyone bugs her about thunder thighs.
Like Judy Garland.
Is like...
or Beyonce.
Is sort of... 60 to
old
like
old timey Michael old timey
that's right
62-ish to six, like Virginia Woolf it's basically she got married to Richard Burton. They both became raging alcoholics where she already was one, and you know, it took its effect on her, basically.
The rest is history.
Yeah.
You can just watch the Lindsay Lohan movie.
At this point in the film, I mean, she obviously had been working since she was a little girl, became a star with National Velvet in 1945. When she was not even a teenager, and never has an awkward period. Like, she becomes a beautiful teenager and then a gorgeous young woman and is a superstar. She says that she didn't quite become interested in actually being good as an actor until the mid-50s. In 54, she did a movie by Richard Brooks called The Last Time I Saw Paris. And that was the first time that she felt the director really inspired her to want to actually work at being a good actor.
Wow.
And so she starts putting in more effort into her choice of roles. In 1957, she does Rain Tree County with Montgomery Clift and earns her first Oscar nomination. She earns her second for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in 58, and her third for this movie in 59. And then her fourth in 1960, so that's four Oscar nominations in a row, for Butterfield 8, which she won in this terribly campy movie as a call girl who writes and writes her phone number with lipstick on a mirror. It's
with really, lip rouge.
Thank
with
you.
With lip rouge. Terrible, terrible film. And then won her second Oscar for Virginia Woolf. And of course, we know everything about her since then. So this is basically at the height of when she's really, obviously her most famous. And then, you know, when she marries Richard Burton, they become Brangelina of their day. And also, I think at a high point when she was like, whoever was going to take her seriously was taking her seriously at this point. I love her sequence in this film because she is so anti-campy Katharine Hepburn. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's a way more boring scene. Like it takes way too long to, I mean, we're like an hour and 15 minutes into a movie that's 2 hours long, and we're still setting stuff up.
Yeah.
Like, the whole movie is just about getting to her confrontation.
But that's when it sort of shows its roots as a stage play, because this movie is just basically, like, four scenes.
Yes, and it gives away the fact that it was a one-act play that they're trying to,
It's also where we're introduced to the whole smoking aspect.
Yes.
There's a really... Yes. Did you guys notice the really wonderful scene where she's smoking, and she says the line... Montgomery Clift says the line... She hates you, and then she has this sort of small exhale of smoke, and as soon as she says the line, doesn't she, the longest trail of smoke comes blaring out of her nostrils.
Yes, I saw that.
And then he has another line, and then she's not done. Then she says her other line, and then the rest of the smoke comes blowing out of her mouth. I'm like, how many orifices is this smoke going to come out of? It's the best scene ever.
Well, and right before that, there's this great shot of her leaning up against the bookshelf, look incredibly sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she follows it with
that. I know. Just like the trucker
smoking. She's so beautiful, I can't stand it. Like, I just can't stand it. I love her so much.
Okay.
And there is
put the fork down, Bill.
And there is the scene later on when it's just like the camera soaking her face up when she lies down on the asylum bed for like what feels like 10 minutes.
And I should say, she was married to Eddie Fisher at this point, so this is when she's also notorious already for having stolen Debbie Reynolds' husband. So you have that scandal combined with the reviews pointing out the salacious themes of this movie. I think the audiences watching at the time didn't care that it was boring at this point, because they were just waiting for... Because what other movie could you see that had so many, you know, dangerous things to say?
Line alert. I really loved her line. We all love Sebastian. Men, women, mineral. Anyway, she ends with mineral. That joke went nowhere. Carry on.
And this was also the movie where she sort of breaks down reliving her possible rape. At the party, that scene rather.
Right.
Which I thought was a shout out. The nervous breakdown that she had reminded me of. Do you remember the after school movie with Helen Hunt where she takes acid and throws herself out the window?
No.
It was like. Oh,
but
no.
I have to watch it now.
Moving on. Okay.
No, not that moves it in further.
Okay.
I'm not going to mouth the directions to you anymore.
You're boring.
Bill has the fork. I'm afraid of him.
I'm not going to tell you to move on. It's fine.
In this scene, she's also talking about herself in the third person.
Yes.
Quite a lot.
That's right, yeah.
She does.
That's
true.
Yeah,
that's where that sort of
introduce
starts.
The possibility that maybe she is crazy. Except, no, there's no point in the movie where you actually genuinely think she's crazy.
No.
And like, she's not the one who descends in elevators when people come over to her house.
And paid to get that constructed.
Then she moves to Montgomery Clift's hospital, and I know that he hasn't put her in the ward. He has her in the nurse's quarter, but I love that she has access to full hair and makeup products and a fabulous dress.
Which is
amazing,
a gorgeous dress.
Gorgeous. Again, the most beautiful woman in the world.
Okay, we got it. Sorry.
But also fantastic pumps that she actually sleeps in.
That's right. And it attempts to escape in, too. That's what I love.
I love Elizabeth Taylor because she's always very direct. And when she has this wonderful, like, laser beam energy, when she's angry at people in movies, she just gives it right to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get to the point where Katharine Hepburn comes in and they're going to, like, you're just so excited about their confrontation.
Yeah.
Also, should point out, this movie's directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz, who, this is about 9 years after he won an Oscar for directing All About Eve, which is... I mean, I guess it's campy in its own way, but
there's nothing better than All About Eve.
That's what I mean. And so it's amazing that, I mean, this movie is made by somebody you wouldn't even think had ever seen All About Eve. So, all right. And I also love, and then when she does fall asleep in her heels and she's like, you're blonde. We were moving on to blondes next. Like, I love this.
He was famished for blondes.
Yeah, like he has this really ravenous sexual appetite. I mean, I think that if Sebastian lived today and like went to a circuit party, there'd be no one left alive.
Oh,
like,
God.
No. But he also probably would have died 20 years ago.
Yes. And then she sleeps with her heels on.
Well, I mean, we're going to get to that scene, but before we do, for me, what I loved about this movie is that it was, for me, it was genuinely terrifying. There were moments, like, in her monologue, in her first scene, where she's recounting the monologue, and then suddenly the tin music comes piping in, and the percussion. Oh, yeah. I was actually like, this is really creepy.
Well, because he's like a horror movie monster, and we never see his face.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and it's my own naivete, because, and I think that's one of the things about old-timey movies that never turned me on, is that my shock value is, like, gone out the window now. So that's why I was really excited about this.
I would like to invite all of our listeners to take a drink every time Mikey says old-timey
movies.
It's on a t-shirt. Shut up. Carry on.
I also want to make fun of the scenes in that show the actual asylum wards with the people, but I have a feeling it might just be a slightly exaggerated version of the state of mental hospitals at the
time.
But
it's no different than, I don't know if anybody's seen the second season of American Horror Story, which takes place in the asylum, but it's really not too big a leap from what...
But I don't know that show is dedicated to realism either.
No, that's sort of the point.
Well, but you know what? I mean, there are staples in asylums, which I wrote at the beginning. There's always someone facing the corner of a wall. Mm-hmm. There's always someone in a rocking chair. Or just rocking.
Or holding a doll.
And there's always someone holding a doll. Yeah. And there's always someone getting in someone else's fucking business.
He said,
"Signed, sealed, delivered."
He said with a head pop.
Yeah, and a snap.
So then we finally come to the point of the movie, which is when the two ladies square off, and it's going to be so exciting. Katharine Hepburn says, "Actually, Sebastian was chased. It's like, you have no limits, woman." And Elizabeth Taylor's like, "We were used as bait." Now, I don't think that this is unlikely, but I am fascinated by this concept of a gay man using gorgeous women to draw men closer to him.
Yeah, except they're called fag hags today, and they're not gorgeous. Sorry.
It's true. And then she talks about the flashback about being forced to put on that scandalous bathing suit, which would have been scandalous for 1937, in which she looks so friggin' beautiful.
And her boobs are gorgeous.
Yeah, she's perfect.
But it's also sort of a challenge for a viewer to put together a concise picture of Sebastian. Because Katharine Hepburn was like, oh, he was a brilliant poet. He wrote one poem a year, one poem a summer when I was with him. But he also seems to be very nurturing to the Elizabeth Taylor character when she was raped at that party. But also this sexually voracious creature who used the people around him.
So basically a gay man.
Basically.
Yeah, thank you.
Basically. Yeah, thanks for that, Bill.
But you know, I mean, the flashbacks as she's saying that monologue, you actually see the action happening and her running in her bathing suit. Oh, which, by the way, when she's being pulled into the water with that bathing suit and that bathing cap and her facial expression.
Who sort of looks
Okay. Watch that scene, but play Bjork's Big Time Sensuality video at the same time. It's the same person. But there's a really great shot when suddenly she comes out of the water and she's all dejected and you see Sebastian's legs go up to her and you think he's going to help her, but he walks right on to that weirdo half fence where all the like hot guys are standing, and I love that scene.
I think the bathing cap looks like somebody just cut Bo Derek's cornrows into like a nice bob.
That's a very common bathing cap of the time.
What I do want to go back to for a moment is Katharine Hepburn's outfit when she comes to
visit. With a feather on her head.
Which sort of looks like, do you remember the Muppets that were all in a row and that the guy pounded with a mallet to make different sounds? It's sort of like somebody flattened one of those put it on her head. And then she's wearing a veil which sort of has like a cutout around her face.
Yeah.
So funny. Yeah. Is that in the waiting room?
Yeah.
When, like, the first time that they meet.
Which, by the way, if you're going to actually be introduced for the first time in the movie about a lobotomy, can you not do it in the lobotomy waiting room? Like, how awkward.
And then Liz kicks her ass and grabs a cigarette to celebrate. Yeah. Yes. I love that. They also use the term erotomania, which is a very dated term as well.
Which is the name of my queer punk band. Come see us at the Beaver.
and so she was talking about how they would procure these.
Yes, we procured for him.
Well, and of course there's no gender in there, of course. Right. That kind of stuff was all...
They procured minerals, remember?
Yeah, exactly. That's what they were doing.
Where are we? I'm lost.
And then we go back to Katharine Hepburn's house. and she descends in that goddamn elevator again because, like, how can you not have a gay son? It's breakfast to get in the elevator.
But she's such a.
Do you think she let him ride? Do you think she let him ride in the elevator?
I don't know. But you know what? She's such a bitch.
There's a lot of inappropriate mother son closeness though, because she's like Elizabeth Taylor's like she even got rid of her husband for him. Like, what is your problem?
I seriously wonder if this movie was an early influence on the Lucille Buster relationship in Arrested Development.
Oh God, Jesus Christ!
I think
so
she fed her husband to that Venus flytrap.
But I was gonna say back to the elevator though. She's such a bitch because she'll just start the conversation in pitch blackness. She's not even in the room. She's like, so nice, you can come. It's like fucking. Anyway, go on.
I wonder if anyone would ever come up with some kind of like positive queer theory about this movie, that the way that everyone's trying to hide gayness and Elizabeth Taylor is the one who like just wants it to come out. Because we all know
that
tells us that being gay is genetic, Elizabeth Taylor is the gene, you know, like she's where it all comes from. So I think it's important that she's the one who's just like, it's her determination to prove that he's gay and that the rest of society wants to cut out her brain to hide it.
You've heard it here, folks. When they actually do prove that the gay gene exists, it's going to be called the Elizabeth Taylor gene.
Bill and Taylor. And that's when we see the flashback in the bathing suit, and she looks so stunning. Mm-hmm. And
it's a horrifying flashback.
And so
horrifying.
It's a very sad state of affairs because she says that Sebastian is lonely and that he deals with it by attracting boys to his female cousin. Montgomery Clift, as we said, he actually was a gay man, and in the biography that I read about him, he, again, serious psychological problems, he had a bad habit of beating men while having sex with them. He would actually whip them with a belt in bed, which I don't know how you get laid twice when you do that.
You told me that. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Remember 20 years ago when everyone said you looked like him? Yeah. So
no, it's in your play, Operation Impervious, of course. Right. I was like, you told me that factoid.
I don't even remember that. Oh, I blacked it out. I think it's interesting to compare this. We see the story as being so dated and campy, and then like actually Montgomery Clift is sort of a real life counterpart. Not that I don't know if he used Elizabeth Taylor as bait. Mm-hmm. I don't think he had to in Hollywood at the time, but that he had a lot of self-hatred issues, basically, which of course likely contributed to his substance abuse problem as well.
Can I ask?
She also says bathhouses in that scene, and just so you know, she does not mean that in the current scene.
I know.
Yes, we know. I did have a moment, but yes.
It's like, that's pretty aggressive.
She's a pioneer.
They were in Europe.
What did he inject her with?
Probably a sedative.
A sedative.
The gorgeous blonde male nurse.
Mm-hmm. No. The second time where she starts groping him.
Oh yeah.
When she's like, "What is that? A truth serum?" He's like, "Yes, but it's not." I was like, "Well, what is it?"
I just thought it was just a sedative fictional. Of some kind, maybe morphine or something.
Okay.
I.e., it's a truth serum in that because it gets her to relax, then she won't necessarily be as guarded.
Okay.
And then we find out that the reason why Sebastian got killed is because he went after the starving boys instead of the usual. Like, I love that he's basically Grizzly Man. Like, he stayed in the wilderness too long and now is with the hungry bears. And he's going after the most dangerous prey. When really, they could have just gone for blondes next, you know, on their next trip.
I had a really interesting thought when she was going through the flashbacks and they're going through the scene where he was being chased. And there's that long shot of him in his beautiful white suit flailing about, running away from the boys. I was like, you know, he's really tall and lanky and large flailing hands. I wouldn't be surprised if that was actually Katharine Hepburn in a suit running away.
I actually couldn't find info about who
getting
was
on a horse
that played him.
Really?
Yeah, and I did some. I didn't. Or maybe I didn't spend enough time researching it, but it is interesting that he's the subject of the entire movie, but we never see his face.
That's really sad that he's not credited.
Yeah. That was apparently Tennessee Williams.
I think it's a young Anthony Hopkins.
You know what?
Never.
But
know.
Tennessee Williams said that because no actor could convincingly portray Sebastian, his absence on the screen would only make the presence more strongly felt. So it was apparently a deliberate choice.
Interesting.
I think if you made this movie today, it wouldn't make any sense. Also, who are those weird guys in the band with the funny hats in that flashback sequence?
I don't know. And why is that guy blowing a muffler as though it's a horn? If you look at it, it's definitely a car muffler.
Well, it seemed like there were three different troops of guys that were chasing them, too.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, Sebastian got around. Like, holy shit.
Did he rape all of them?
I know.
Well, they all ate him, so they must have had a good reason.
They all ate him, and her final monologue where she's screaming and crying was a little too much, but I loved it because it came from her.
I loved it too.
I thought, you know what? Remind me to never go on vacation with Elizabeth Taylor because that's a bad ending.
Well, she and Richard Burton were famous for always booking the suites above and below their hotel rooms because they used to scream and break shit so much that they didn't want to bother
that's
anybody.
Very
she's very considerate.
She's the best.
She is the best. Apparently, the story goes that when she did that long monologue scene, she was tapping into her grief. Her husband had died in a plane crash only a few years before that. And that apparently she was inconsolable after she filmed that. I find that hard to believe. I find there's always a lot of stories about actors' real life creeping into the way that they perform scenes. And it doesn't... If you're not an actor, maybe that makes more sense to you. But if you are, you understand that there's way more to do with technique and imagination than suddenly being invaded by your own personal life.
Bernadette Peters' husband died in a plane crash, and she's been perfectly fine.
Speaking of
Annie, get your gun. She just was singing, I can do it better. And
speaking
she just
of suddenly... In the play, do they honestly say suddenly last summer so many times?
In that section, I bet that's exactly
throughout the whole movie. They said it 8 times, which I think is like excessive. Like, all right, Tennessee Williams, calm down.
So if you could have one, I want to go around the table and ask this. If you could have one quote from Suddenly Last Summer on a t-shirt, what could it be?
I just gave you 5. Were you not listening?
Just pick one.
Jesus.
Pick one. Everybody
it would be
pick
something
one.
That Katharine Hepburn says in the opening scene because she just drops a lot of pearls.
Oh,
in
no.
Sequence.
Carry on. I'm going to find it because it's actually an Elizabeth Taylor one.
What would yours be?
Mine is definitely the one that you mentioned earlier, Michael, about the drugs and how the drugstore is.
Isn't it nice that the drugstore is keeping me alive?
That's the one.
I think I think that should be the. If any of our fans want to make a BGM t-shirt for us, that'll be the one.
And mine would be I'm famished. For blondes.
I'm famished
That's
for
good.
Blondes. Oh,
the
absolutely.
Elizabeth Taylor one that I liked is now that I can start smoking, I'm as good as a lamb.
Yes, I had that one written down too.
Yes.
I love that one.
Well, and of course, after her big explosion, we come back to the room where everybody has witnessed all of the flashback.
And Katharine Hepburn has lost it completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. And then makes her secretary cry.
That's right.
And we find out that it was she who was crazy the whole time, as if the elevator didn't give it away.
Right?
Or why doesn't the house have stairs?
Or the petty jealousy-inspired lobotomy.
Yes. Yeah.
Just, I don't like that girl. Give her a lobotomy.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I love...
She's the original mean girl. Elizabeth Taylor's the original gay man. Yeah. Katharine Hepburn's the original
but
mean
I love,
girl.
But I love how Liz's monologue is set up in this scene, because... the doctor's like, okay, just start talking, and Elizabeth Taylor's like, I was bored, and he's like, no, speed it up. Just let's cut right to the chase.
Oh, yes.
Bill, you have to put that as your recap notes, the whole Elizabeth Taylor and Katharine Hepburn being the mean girl.
Well, Katharine Hepburn gets to exit via the elevator.
Of course.
Giving us
this of when she came.
And everyone just leaves Elizabeth Taylor
alone in her stake. Also, like, where I wonder if people are like, what is up there? Like, the point where she's finally actually going up in the elevator. Like, we want to just see what's up there. Maybe there's no actual floor up there. Maybe she just sits in the box until it's time to come
up. or she just ends up on the roof of her house, overlooking everyone.
I would say, like, a giant Fabergé egg that she sort of comes out of.
Drag queens, if you're listening, that's what you need to do.
So, as I said, the end result of this movie was that it was a huge box office hit. Although, then after it was a hit, a lot of people involved went on to denounce it. And I wonder if it's because it was such a, you know, it made such a scandal that then people wanted to distance themselves from it. Tennessee Williams denied having any part in writing it, even though he actually is co-credited on the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
He said he thought Elizabeth Taylor was miscast as Catherine, saying, it stretched my credulity to believe such a hip doll as Liz wouldn't know at once in the film that she was being used for something evil.
A hip doll? Was he a beat poet?
Yeah, it was 1961.
Okay, fine.
He said that he told the Village Voice in 1973 that the movie went too far afield from his original play and made him throw up. Gore Vidal was one of the credited screenwriters, and he said that... He criticized the ending for having... criticized that the ending was altered by the director, and he said, we were also not helped by those overweight ushers from the Roxy Theater on Fire Island pretending to be small, ravenous boys. And the director blamed the source material, saying that the play is badly constructed based on the most elementary Freudian psychology.
God, and everybody guys. Blamed the Jews.
Jesus, calm down. Go fucking get it over with.
But that happy romantic ending does seem a little bit arbitrary and tacked on when Elizabeth Taylor and Monty Clift sort of
this is
ride
always,
off in the sunset.
But this is always the way that, especially movies made having to do with some kind of psychological theme in this period, it's always that we finally get to the one secret that unlocks everything, mm-hmm. and then we can go off calmly and deal with the rest of our lives.
Well, that's what I wrote here. All of a sudden, she just seemed rather yeah. okay. Very
the Three Faces of yeah. Eve does the same thing mm-hmm. 2 years before this, where she's forced to remember that she was forced to kiss a corpse when she was a kid, and that's what made her become multiple personality, and then after that, she's okay.
They were fucked up back then, eh?
Well, it was just that psychiatry was a burgeoning field in this decade, and it was something that really captured the public's imagination, and so it made its way into a lot of work. And Tennessee Williams, this was how he dealt with his own guilt and anguish about being gay, which is in a lot of his work. This and Cat in a Hot Tin Roof are the two that I can think of where being gay is explicitly mm-hmm. referenced.
That's crazy.
And in the play.
Yeah, and it seems like this has been a lot less sanitized than the film of Cat in a Hot Tin Roof.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, Cat in a Hot Tin Roof is completely rewritten, actually. Yeah. And in my opinion, made better. Whilst in this one, it is.
Should that be my next old-timey movie to watch?
Old-time. Well, it's what, what's his name Eve? Watched in Making Love.
Oh, All About Eve.
All About Eve?
You've never seen All About Eve? Who are you?
I know.
You're not on this podcast anymore. Andrew.
Oh, no! It was true.
You should definitely see other Tennessee Williams films.
For
as
sure.
Well.
I'm going to.
Sweet Bird of Youth and this property is condemned.
Streetcar Named Desire.
Streetcar Named Desire, yeah. Yeah,
I
where
can't
the gay references cut
that.
Out of the film version.
I'm a loser.
All right, is there anything else we want to say about Suddenly Last Summer? Before
I loved
on?
It.
I loved it, too.
I know it's BGM, it's bad gay movies, so for me, this week, it was bitchin' gay
movies. Well, yeah. I thought it was terrible, but I loved it.
Yeah, and I do, again, I want to see a resurgence of drag queens wearing that dead Muppet with a cutout veil that Catherine wore.
Any final words from you?
No, not on this film. I really, it was interesting it was great to have the assignment of going back and looking at it again. I hadn't seen it in years, and it was really interesting.
And
there's elements that
and
I
And thank you for being here.
Well,
oh,
we thought
you,
it would
pleasure.
Be an appropriate choice for you, given that you are a very wonderful and successful theater director. My second favorite of any I've ever worked with.
Oh, well, thank you. Uh-oh. Haven't worked with the first one yet?
So to finish us off, oh, that sounds terrible,
for our happy ending.
For the next time we hit Elizabeth Taylor.
Bill already got finished off just thinking about Liz Taylor. It's
so
weird.
Come on, like, she's just
she's
wonderful.
Gorgeous.
She's gorgeous, but she's just, like, beyond gorgeous. Like, she's okay. just...
Put the fork down, Bill.
I think an era ended when she died a couple years ago. Like, I think...
Do you need a towel?
All right. As always, we are on iTunes, so if you haven't already, please find us there and subscribe to us, and also rate us, because that helps us to be found.
Yes, please.
We also take donations, so if you feel so inclined to give us a tip, please do so at badgaymovies.com. There is a link for the donation. Visit us at badgaymovies.com. You can sign up to our RSS feed there. Write to us at badgaymovies2013@gmail.com and send us any recommendations or feedback or hatred, even if you want, or
your
photos
home
of
address.
Elizabeth Taylor, stories of when you got drunk with Elizabeth Taylor,
pictures of you with Elizabeth Taylor,
yes. hitting Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh,
terrible. Or your gay Elizabeth Taylor gene, whatever it is that you want to do. And
our t-shirt examples that we'll steal and profit from.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you to Andrew for joining
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Andrew.
We were
thank
thrilled that he was
me.
Able to do it. And thank you to you for listening. And please join us again in a few weeks.